have a tale, not from Beetle and the Bard, a tale for us to start this week's episode that I heard was daunting.
Yeah, I was on the subway this morning heading to work, and I get on, and sitting across from me is this, to be generous, I'll say maybe he was 320 pound.
You said 350
gentleman.
In the text.
So I said I would be generous, you know, and all of a sudden I see on the right side of this guy's jacket, he has a Hand of the Kingpin. And now this guy, like I said, he's easily 300 plus pounds. You can probably tell from the text that I sent, right? Because I snapped a photo of him. And I shared it with Zach and Eric.
Mike is the biggest creep of all time. This guy's looking at him.
He says, ignore the motion.
No, he was asleep.
Oh,
he had his eyes closed.
Oh, well, so, Micah, I've taken many pictures of sleeping people on a subway before.
But have you ever been on New York City subway during rush hour? I mean, there's people all around you. There's people looking over your shoulder. They're going to be wondering, why is this guy taking a picture of a 350-pound black man sitting on the
subway? You were the biggest asshole of all time, I bet. Like, look at this guy taking pictures of guys sleeping. But they didn't know that he was, like, the second in command of the entire kingdom of Westeros. All seven.
But I just thought it was awesome that he was wearing this Hand of the Kingpin
his
jacket.
The place you get that Hand of the Kingpin is the HBO store. Is that right?
No. He got it from the king.
No, he got it from the king. Yeah, it looks authentic.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Spoiler.
I'm looking at it right now from this photograph. It looks like a banana medallion from Donkey Kong Country.
I'm sure that's exactly what it is.
Wait, hey, guys, let's all welcome Selena back. She's here.
And hey,
yay!
Back.
Hey. I'm here to represent the brand love and all that other crap that that I apparently do here.
How's Hypeable doing over the last week since we haven't seen you? How's that been going?
Hypeable.com is doing fantastic. Thank you for asking.
Listen, I did see something that made me so super excited. I saw you tweet about it with Andrew, and I wanted to like get in on that tweet combo, but I'm gonna let you guys keep it. But you guys just launched a Doctor Who podcast, and I'm so excited about that.
Yes, we are so excited. I mean, I'm not on it, so
all right.
But it's a number of Hypeable staff members who are doing a Who Hype. And it's very exciting. The only part that annoys me is that they rejected my suggestion to use Who Let the Hype Out for
my
their
God.
Theme tune. That would have been amazing.
I do have to say, I saw it and I geeked out. I mean, you and I had our little Doctor Who conversation on Twitter one day, but it was really funny because it's cool that they're doing, I saw like a speaking point for like an episode was they're talking about an old Russell T. Davies episode, and that was just like the craziest thing. So that's cool as hell.
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome show, and it's debuting, I think, sometime this week because they've recorded their first episode already. And yes, I'm more excited for this than like any other show.
Sorry, I can't stop looking at this picture of this man on the subway. I would have been like, you don't look like Peter Dinklage. Peter Dinklage, hello? Yeah, it is. Actually, he does look like duck sauce. True story. Well, I guess we should talk about Game of Thrones because this is Game of Owns. It's a podcast that's hopefully, I had to ask these guys what the episode number was because I didn't remember to type into this document. But hopefully it's near and dear to your hearts by insert episode number here. Well, what is it, Terrence? What did you say what number we're on?
I think, there's number 9?
9.
Yeah.
Let's welcome everybody to the podcast right now. Everyone that's listening, we're at one episode older than all of the new people that just started watching Game of Thrones this season.
I got you.
And today we are completely full. The entire panel is here, and by the entire panel, I do mean the original cast. I want to give us a cool name like the trio from Harry Potter, but we can't do that because there's too many
of us.
The
Quattro.
Wait, there's five of us, though.
Oh, the Cinco.
The Pentagon.
King's Guard.
The King's Guard. Oh, perfect. I love it.
This week's episode was the Prince of Winterfell, and it opened with Theon, appropriately, and his sister Yara, or Asha, depending on if you're a book lover, I guess. It really opened with Yara laying the smackdown on Theon. I mean, probably my own of the week is going to be, are you the dumbest cunt alive?
And the C word is dropped on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, what did you guys think of the episode overall, I guess? Let's get your thoughts on that, and then we can kind of dive into the specifics.
I definitely thought it was a good episode, but it definitely had a feel of the calm before the storm, if you know what I mean. Like, this was a big setup episode for what is going to go down next week.
I feel like we've been saying that all season. You know,
yeah. I know, yeah. But it's getting. I feel like the other episodes have had sort of. I'm not saying that this didn't have value on its own, but this sort of like most of the storylines, they were basically just hanging around waiting for the big fight. That's all they were doing.
Well, you know,
it was still good though.
We actually saw some TNA in this episode, so I was pretty happy with that.
Well, in this episode, they're able to say, "Hey, Stannis, you know, not only they stop saying he's going to be here any day now. They're saying he's going to be here tomorrow, like, or at least he's saying that. You know, the winds are right. You know, we're going to be there in a day now. So." There's no time for anybody else to do anything. This is where we've seen the characters in this episode is pretty much where they're going to be when war breaks out at King's Landing, and that's going to be really exciting. So I think it really was just kind of a review of where everybody's at and kind of what they're doing. Maybe a little bit. There was a lot of downtime though, a lot of character moments in this episode.
And I think that's why even you got that very quick glance of Daenerys and Ser Jorah, because you probably aren't going to see them in the next episode at all. You know, I threw out that question to you guys, you know, why are they even in this episode? What's the point? But I think what you guys just brought up, the fact that it's laying the groundwork for Blackwater is probably why they were left out or why they were included just for that brief moment.
I have kind of a timing question. In the beginning of the first season, I remember Ned Stark goes from Winterfell to King's Landing and back in like an episode. But Catelyn says to him, "You've been gone, you know, 2-3 months. It takes like a month to travel between the two." So with Brienne and Jaime Lannister heading from where Robb Stark is to, you know, to King's Landing, do you think they'll get there before the Battle of Blackwater? After the Battle of Blackwater, during, when will they get there? Like, will we see them again before season 3, or will we not? Because I still think that this world is, like, really, really big, right? It's supposed to be really big, and with Stannis coming tomorrow, they really can't screw with the time, you know, that much.
I hope that they don't get there for a while, because their journey is awesome.
Yeah, when that entire scene when they were launching off in the boat, I was just like, oh, and this begins the start of a beautiful friendship.
Yes, it's like my favorite part of the books. Oh my gosh.
How about that, though? How about the whole scene when Rob comes in to first confront Catelyn about what she's done? I mean, the whole son-mother relationship was completely thrown out the window.
Yeah, I'm glad for that. I'm glad he's not, shy or weak like Jon Snow is. He can hand a woman her business when she has,
We had a Twitter question where someone was like, "Hey, where the hell has Baelish been?" They tweeted at us the other day, and it's just like that. Where the hell has Baelish been? Is he still like traveling around with the girl wearing the sink?
Him and Varys, I think, took a little vacation together.
A little summer at Harrenhal, just enjoying the hallowed halls.
Yeah, exactly.
That's beautiful.
That mother-son thing is still kind of there, because if it were anybody else, they would be beheaded at this point. But this was the first time in this series that
Rob's not going to behead anyone, though. Come on now.
Well, or a prisoner. Okay, or he could have thrown her in, you know, in one of the pens or something like that. But what my point is with this is like the first time in this series, in the TV show, that I've really been disappointed with Catelyn. You know, I mean, I've seen her as kind of this victim the entire first part, the entire first and second season. But now it's just, she's just making these decisions behind Rob's back. And it's really sitting with me really, really uneasy.
She has Brienne, though, which is good. Like, if it were anybody else escorting Jaime to make an exchange, you know, the Stark girls for the Jaime.
The Jaime.
What else? He transcends boundaries.
Yes,
you can't define him anymore. He's the Jaime of the show. He is this show's Jaime. Other shows have different Jaimes.
Yeah.
With British accents.
They're called Sawyer.
Called Sawyer. Speaking of, number one of the Lost, many Lost references we could make this episode. When they're talking about defending Winterfell against thieves. But we'll get to that, I guess, a little bit later.
Like Sawyer's gun stash.
Sawyer's gun stash. We did the same thing they were talking about. The same thing that, Varys and Tyrion and Bronn were going over about, you know, thieves capturing the food and profiting off of it, you know, finding the supply line, cutting it off and becoming the new king of the mound, as it were. I was like, yeah, I saw that on Lost. So
I was told that I was very Sawyer-like with my nicknames and stuff. And I usually would question that and say, that's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. But then I just realized how we've basically given a nickname to every single character on the show whose name isn't
true.
Like Henry
this
or
is
John.
True.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you guys feel something was missing, though? Because last episode, you're left with Catelyn drawing a sword on Jaime, and then this episode, all of a sudden, you find out that he's escaped. So, as a viewer of the TV show, are you thinking to yourself, wait, what happened? Why did she let him go?
I personally never really sit back and question the motives of people that are working on shows like this, because they've done something and they do things to warrant their position, and I give them all the respect in the world. That being said, objectively, and I'm not even trying to look through fanboy goggles, I watched this episode and I just kind of sit back and I question the entire thing. The pacing with John and Ygritte was just so terrible, in my opinion. Like, they're so lost that now he's her prisoner, and now they're meeting up with Boneface. Mm,
the Lord of Bones.
One day they're lost, and then now they're meeting up with a dude. I just feel like they left so many holes, and I know that the book would fill a lot of those holes, but they've done a better job covering so many other holes in the show before. And I feel like the gap with Brienne and with Jaime and with Catelyn was a lot more acceptable because, I mean, they don't have to necessarily show, to answer your question, Micah, they don't have to show her having the full conversation with Jaime and, you know, with the sword on his throat, because we know that Catelyn's not going to kill Jaime. That would probably be bad for the show. She's right. Or for the book, she's not going to kill Jaime. So the fact that they didn't show that conversation, I feel like just showing Brienne with Jaime fills in everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I think, like, one thing that we can definitely take away from this is that it's a really good thing that they're splitting the third book into two seasons, because I think that you are right that there are definitely some parts that have been rushed in order to make room for other things. Like, how many episodes? They have, like, two episodes of what's-his-face, John and Ygritte running around in the snow.
Yeah,
and that's obviously something that allowed for a lot of great jokes and a lot of great tension and all of that. But that does mean that suddenly we've got three episodes left and the plot has to move really fast.
It was just so
they have
light
to cut some things.
You know what I mean? Like, one moment they're cracking dick jokes, and then the next moment Rob or John maybe getting killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just, I just felt like, in the book, I'm sure it made total sense. And in the show, it, for all intents and purposes, it did make sense. But were you guys just not seeing that and thinking, okay, so they're here now?
No, well, I'm not only that. Let's switch to that particular scene, though, that you're talking about. Because not only are, you know, like you're saying, okay, here we are, but Corrin Halfhand is there as well, who seemingly got captured somewhere along the way.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's explained in the show. He just says that they found Jon Snow and Ygritte's tracks. They went to track them, but that the wildlings, or whoever that group of people can refer to themselves as, because they seemed a lot more organized than we had seen wildlings before, Lord of Bones' troop, they found and killed everybody but Corrin Halfhand. And, you know, I thought that was dealt with fine on the show, because Jon Snow says, they all died for me, didn't they? And Corrin Halfhand is like, make sure it wasn't for nothing. And
yeah,
that just kind of, I don't know, closed the loop for me. The question I really had about this scene is why Ygritte was able to talk to the Lord of Bones that way, where she was like, oh, that's something for Mance to decide, don't you think? And was just kind of like getting all in his face.
She's free.
They're all free.
They're all free.
That's the whole point.
Yeah,
they're all equal.
Exactly.
And she's powerful.
I think what Eric's trying to say is, being the kind of person that the Lord of Bones is, he's surprised that she even did it, let alone got away with it.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Even if she is free, even if they have, like, even if they can both vote, okay? You know, the fact that she got
in
his
face. No, she's powerful. I mean, she's clearly a fighter, and she's has all these skills, and who knows what she's done to earn his trust, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure she has some kind of power over him.
If anything, it's painting the image that the concept of rank is fairly new for these people. Like, they've just appointed a leader. Like, this is all new to them. So maybe she's overstepping a bound that they previously wouldn't have had before.
And waving the whole Mance Raider thing over his head as well.
Yeah.
Is sort of her trump card. It's saying, look, we're all equal, but Mansrader is a little more equal than the rest of us. So if you piss him off, you're not going to be the Lord of Bones anymore.
In that scene when Halfhand was like, hey, basically like, hey, dude, check this out. Just play along. Yeah. And he was like, I hate you. You're dumb. You're dumb and all this stuff. I was thinking, hey, man, that's pretty good acting. And then I thought Inception, wait. He is a good actor because he's acting.
He's
in the
acting
show.
Right.
So I was like, this is two levels. This is too
is
much.
Is the top
for me.
Gonna stop spinning? That's oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was great, right? Because you know, they're playing up this rivalry, like, oh, nobody likes Jon Snow, making him seem much more badass than he could possibly make himself seem. You know? When Quarren Halfhand gets angry and kicks him down a slope, you know, you get to thinking, oh, okay, so now Jon Snow is like a force. You know, he's actually managed to offend somebody, when in reality he really hasn't. He's just kind of flunked his way through the last three episodes, if you'll forgive
me. Oh, that's so mean. That is so mean.
Sorry, but there's an active voice and a passive voice, and if we were describing the exploits of Jon Snow in the book right now, it would be passive. Things happen to him.
So, Eric, are you saying that you don't like Jon Snow, but you like Theon Greyjoy?
Well, you know, let's go back to that Theon scene in the beginning of the episode. I'm not going to talk about it long at all, but if you know, to answer your question, I felt that the way this episode opened with Yara and Theon and stuff, I was very underwhelmed by it, just in general. Like, she handed him his ass and all that, but I didn't really get what she was trying to do telling him that story about when he was a baby.
She cares about him.
Yeah.
That was new to me. That was totally new to me. And I was like, I hate you, but I don't. I'm just like, whatever.
Well, she's a layered character.
Yeah, she's a confused character.
Whenever it comes down to it, at the end of the day, no matter how much she owns him all the time, they're still family. And there's that, I mean, we've seen it through and through with the series, that there's this unbreakable bond with family. No matter if your family has, you know, done something absolutely horrible, you're going to back them up because they're your family.
I couldn't decide if I could take her at her word for that. Like, if she was really being sincere, because to think about it, and she's totally right, he has screwed everything.
Yes.
You know, he has made the worst decision you could possibly make at that time by pretending that Bran and Rickon are dead. So everybody wants him dead and all that stuff. But considering the fate she was happy to consign him to, with raiding sea villages, fishing villages, you know, before he took Winterfell, you know, I still can't feel like she really cares about him all that much, because if he hadn't gone and taken Winterfell, he would have been in even in a worse situation than he was now.
Yeah.
Well, I think she loves him, but she doesn't respect him.
Well, that
you know,
much
raiding
is clear.
Raiding villages, he'd have been out of the way. He wouldn't have been in harm's way. He wouldn't have gotten any glory either, but he would just be sort of off on his own.
Yeah.
Which is what she wanted.
Can we talk about how dumb Theon really is? He says, look, I've killed all the ravens and I've got all the horses. And I mean, a word is going to get out about what he did.
There were two or three different scenes in this episode where people said, we haven't heard from Winterfell. Varys was talking about how all his little birds went silent ever since Theon captured Winterfell. They don't know anymore. Rob still doesn't know that his little brothers are supposedly dead. And thirdly, Tywin said Theon, the Greyjoys did them a favor by distracting Rob, but they too don't know any more details. So it sounded like killing the ravens actually worked.
Well, yeah, it's true.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
Either way, somebody's going to come up and find out what the hell is going on. I mean, either way, unless somebody escapes again or, you know, something like that, someone is going to find out, and then all hell will break loose for Theon.
Yeah, well, we're about to hopefully see that bastard of Roose Bolton's attack Winterfell in some capacity. But, you know, Eric, going back to what you were saying before, I think that there were a number of times, and I quoted at the beginning of the episode, where Yara was attacking Theon, but she was almost doing it in a way to convince him to go back home. I think she wanted him to leave. She realizes that every person in the North wants to see him hang, and probably some in other parts of Westeros as well. She knows he is in terrible, terrible danger if he stays here, because he's amongst enemies anyway. I mean, how many men did he take Winterfell with?
20.
How many 20 are staying
right
with him?
Right.
It looked like Yara rode off.
And they all suck. Let's
her.
Be honest. They all suck. You know
what I mean? Exactly. Exactly.
Like, I thought it was really funny because when we meet her, she's a creep, and she doesn't like him,
yeah.
You know, and for rightly
she
so.
She got like a tummy rub with
yeah,
her problem.
No, that was not a
brother.
That wasn't a tummy rub.
I was being
generous.
PC,
yeah.
PG, I should say.
Let's just make this. Let's just throw down the gauntlet right now. And this is, I'm speaking directly to all of you guys listening to the show. Gauntlet being thrown. If you watch Game of Thrones, we assume that when you listen to Game of Thrones, you are of the age to have watched Game of Thrones, and thus you can take us saying things like, "We'll just the gauntlet is thrown." Moving on, she gave him that story, right? And I thought it was a little. It just happened so quickly. And another issue with filling gaps. It went from her just thinking he's the biggest dumbass, saying, "Hey, take the sea bitch." Mm-hmm. Like, take it. It's the sea bitch. It's funny. And just laughing, right?
Yeah.
It went from that to her being there and be like, "Okay, you took Winterfell. That's legit." And then, but she's like, so nice. The story was, it was completely out of left field, but she was being a total dick to him just before, saying, "You are a terrible baby. I wanted to kill you. It was crazy shit. I wanted to kill you. You were so loud. You sounded like a dying pig. But when I looked over at you and you looked up at me from your crib, you stopped crying and you smiled." And she just walked off. And that right there, as far as a sibling moment, is huge. And I just think it was a really important thing for her character to move forward. But I really wish we would have seen more of her before she was able to be so, like, I mean, for all intents and purposes, she was pretty nice even saying that to him.
I totally agree that we needed to see more of Yara, but that's basically because I like her. So she's an awesome character in the books, again, with the books.
Well,
but,
you like Yara,
she is,
and
so
I like her brother, Theon. So together, we like the Greyjoy.
Oh, God, it's not the same thing.
Okay. What about Baelish?
Oh, I do agree that Theon's gotten himself into quite a pickle, and I look forward to seeing him try and himself out.
He's just so selfish. Like, he's just all he wants is desperately for his dad to approve of him, which I guess
dad
in itself isn't so bad if he wasn't
got
willing
daddy
to.
He does have daddy
problems.
What do you
think?
What do you think
issues
is the word
not the lost
that
parallel
that you know Father Greyjoy wants with his son? She says, "Dad would like a word." What do you think it's going to be? You know,
dumbass.
That's such a time investment to have a conversation with anyone in Westeros.
Yeah.
I killed the ravens, so basically I have to take a ship to the Iron Islands.
Yeah.
But she is so rude to him, though. I mean, she said when he was taking Winterfell, "Which one gave you more trouble, the cripple or the 5-year-old?
Not only that, but
yeah. So true, though.
You know, he says, "I treated him honorably," and he says, "You call it treachery. You know, you locked him in their home and then were upset when they didn't keep a promise. I call it bravery."
She has honor. That's what she has, and that's what Theon doesn't have.
Yeah. No, it's so true, because she can be vicious. She can be Ironborn. She can take and she even said that in the conversation, "We're Ironborn. We take what's ours." But it's like she was also just like, "But listen, man, you got to have enough sense not to be a total asshole, and you definitely are."
Yeah, well,
and everyone wants you to die for it.
What I thought was great about that scene too is all the men. She's just insulting him in front of those, like, you know, 15, 20 guys at the table, and then she asks them. They're all eating while they're, you know, just kind of listening in, and then she asks them to leave. And there's that long shot of 15 guys getting up and leaving the room. And I was like, really? They couldn't go somewhere more quiet or private? They commanded all these other guys to stop what they were doing and leave. Like, this is like Kingdom at its best. Like,
it's Highborn, man.
Highborn, yeah, man. That's I was just like, wow, you know, all these people just displace themselves. Like,
speaking about Yara and Theon, I guess the whole sort of big reveal at the end, quote unquote reveal, about Bran and Rickon being alive. Any of you guys who hadn't read the books, were you at all surprised?
No.
The slightest.
No.
No.
Not since we recorded last week's Game of Thrones. Yeah, they kind of put that to rest.
Kind of talked about that a lot. The show just didn't really leave any question at all that it could have been them.
I was happy that we got to see, like, Hodor sleeps. So that was cool to finally see that.
Thank God, because we were all wondering.
Listen, can we just take a moment and appreciate...
You must have terrible morning wood.
Yeah, no shit, right?
Oh, gross.
You went there.
The gauntlet has been thrown, guys. You asked for it. Now, can we just take a moment and appreciate, just for one moment, two things? All right. First off, the amazing glacier shot right at the beginning after the whole yard.
I knew you'd like
thing.
That. I knew you'd yes. like that.
It was yes. just... It was just like, it hey, guys, amazing. Let's take a trip up to Iceland. All of us people, a few semis full of shit. They're like, hey, listen, HBO totally funded us to make this show. And Benioff and Weiss and all those people were just like, and Kat Taylor on Twitter, you know, doing her stuff. Like, everyone's just like, all right, let's go. And they go to Iceland and they're just like hanging out on these just giant glaciers. And they shoot dialogue scenes that last 30 seconds. It's just so funny. I love it. I think it's beautiful. And it was just a great shot. But also, the second thing I really would like to appreciate is what will probably go down as the own of the season when we finally see the two together, the duo, and he says, "You're much uglier in the daylight." I just thought that was the funniest thing ever. Jamie and Brienne are going to change the world. One.
Yes.
One, like, yes. One spinoff, one spinoff sitcom at a time.
I did
one hand at a time.
I did not get this. This comes from not having read the books. I didn't know that there was anything particularly special about to happen to them, except
they're going to go on a journey.
Well, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, an amazing.
I hope it lasts
journey.
Longer than Arya and Gendry's journey.
Yeah, really.
But at the same time, no. Because he's Jaime, and because it just seems like the show's entire attention is on him. This last, you know, sort of during this arc of the season. I do look forward to when that happens.
Speaking of Arya and Gendry, true. Though, they're about to set out on another journey, or so it seems.
So what?
Which is good.
What was with Arya?
Yeah,
she was totally trying to wish for more wishes from Jack and Hygar.
Well, it worked.
She totally found a way to do it. This was crazy.
She was. He goes. Unname me. No. Please.
He was serious about it, and then he said
awesome.
A girl lacks honor, and she just shrugged. She shrugged right in his face. She's like, "Oop."
No, that was so great, and that's something they're doing just beautifully with the show. Like same with the Brienne and Jamie thing. It's just just way to take it
yes.
from face value from what it was, and just make it even stronger for us on the TV.
But did you notice that she said he's going to kill my brother? She just completely let that slip.
Does he not already know she is who she says she is?
I think
he already
knows.
He does. I think he does know who she is, and maybe that's a reveal for later on in the last episode of the season, but I'm not quite sure how he knows.
I love his character in this
show. Yeah, no, I love this guy. And a couple episodes ago,
you
mentioned he was talking in the third person, and that was unsettling. Like, I get that. But this guy, I don't know, he just was really cool. Like Zach said, when he says please, he really means it. He doesn't want, you know, he said the gods don't mock.
There's just something that we like as consumers and as people that enjoy stories. And it's the same thing with tales like Harry Potter, where adults give these younger kids all the respect in the world and speak at them with a totally even level. We, for some reason, it empowers the kid and it verifies who they are as a person and as a character in the show, and people love that. That's just a really great plot mechanic.
I think
and that's
right.
what they did with Arya and Jack in that scene, and instantly for us it makes him so much more likable. Just like any member of the Order would be likable to us because they believe the shit that Harry's saying. It's the same thing.
I think you nailed that. Mm. I think you nailed that pretty well. The now with Arya though, so I guess she really was going to kill Tywin, but she took her time with it, and then unfortunately, it kind of things got out of hand. You know, they happened too soon for her to act, so she had to kind of change her game plan. But she knew ultimately he would go to kill Rob, and I guess her plan was to kind of get, you know, Jack and Hygar to kill Tywin, but before she could, it was too late. So, you know, we're seeing this kind of delay where she really did. I guess she learned probably quite a bit about him. You know, during her captivity, if we could call it that. But, you know, she grew to like him, and that was actually a kind of a flaw, but at least we see now that she really did want to. You know, when she was pressed, she did want him dead, and would have commanded it to be so if he hadn't already hopped on his horse and left.
I'm so excited, though, that her and Gendry and potentially Hot Pie, depending on what they do, that they're on their way on another journey, because I felt like we were so cheated out of the first part, but I really...
Yeah, we
Arya
were,
and
because
Gendry's
it's
sort of
this
friendship.
Huge battle, right, that takes place at Harrenhal, and I don't want to say anything, because maybe they're going to somehow tie it into that last episode, but it's almost a revolt of sorts, and that's how Arya is able to get away, and she uses Jack and Hygar in that process to escape. So it's similar in some ways, but I'm interested to see how they're going to play this out.
I thought I was really excited last year, and this was, you know, before the website, before the podcast, blah, 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 blah. So completely objectively, consumer perspective, I was so excited to see her and Gendry move on and continue this story. And like, there probably would have eventually been Arya Gendry shippers in my camp and stuff like that. And then I felt like, and I just, it passively happened, and I didn't really realize it completely until this episode, and I saw him blacksmithing with Hot Pie, but I felt like their entire relationship was just an afterthought in the series, and I'm glad that they're hopefully reprising it now. They kind of replaced him with Tywin and Jaqen.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's such a shame, because, I don't know, I don't know, I just love them.
Yeah, right? He's the heir.
It's not that honorable men are boring to watch, but I guess maybe that's why I find Jon Snow boring, mm-hmm. right? Because there's really not a lot to say about him. He can be counted on to do the right thing. So there's less edginess there than there is with focusing on, say, Tywin, for instance, where you don't know what he's
doing. I think your disdain toward Jon Snow, a lot of it is to blame with the shoddy development of the book into the show, because just that simple, the pacing of their entire like court jester like trek through the snow and eventually him getting captured by the girl that he captured, I do feel like, and I haven't read it yet, but I assume that there's a lot more going on there beyond the wall than what we saw, and I think that you'd probably have a different opinion if you had read it rather than just.
Well, I mean, Sam, and that's possible, and I do plan on reading Dew in the interim between seasons 2 and 3. But, you know, Sam, you know, holds Jon Snow in such high esteem. And I think I recall Jon Snow making his own decisions and acting and causing things to happen. I mean, he acts to go to the wall to begin with, so there's definitely some honor in him there about that. But I do feel like, you know, lately, because he's had his ass handed to him by a girl, you know,
she's awesome though.
She is cool. I really like her, to be honest. And
Selena's like, hey, I'm right here, guys.
Yeah, I'll stop talking about
it's
John.
Chivalry, not Savaltish. Come on, guys.
I want to like Jon Snow, and I don't hate him at all. I think there are more interesting characters for me at the moment.
But Eric, I think that you're absolutely, you make a really good point, actually, because whatever happens in the book, you shouldn't have to have read the books in order to enjoy the show and in order to understand the motivations of the characters. And I think it's really important to say that you, as someone who hasn't read the books, are getting a totally different impression of Jon. I think that's kind of the same thing that's happening with Daenerys. Because even though I've read the books and I have my opinion on her from the books, in the show I have a completely different opinion on her, because she just is, and we're going to go on to talk about Daenerys later, obviously, but because she just is portrayed in a different way. And you could probably argue the same thing about Jon, that he's portrayed like almost slow.
Like what Zach said. Yeah, I mean, well, like what Zach said, where the pacing, in a way, you know, whether or not Benioff and Weiss wanted to sabotage the character of Jon Snow, it may be turning out that way, or they may be making him more passive than he is.
It makes for better television if an attractive and smart girl is showing him the ways of the world in the North. It makes for better television, and I totally get it. And just Selena made the best point. We should not have to say, well, if you read the book, you'll understand it. Because as a television show, it is supposed to be a standalone product, and it is. And again, an amazing point, because Daenerys is much more likable in the books. You know, she's young, she's at her wit's end, and she's just trying to make things right in the world. Her husband has just been is dead. All of these things are happening to her, and it's bad. But in the show, it appears that she's just using people just to get her, you know, to get her kicks. She likes dragons, and she likes the guy who likes her, and that's about as deep as she goes in the show. So,
and I think that. You know, Eric, you will see Jon Snow get aggressive by the end of this season.
Ooh, that's pretty quick. That's within the next 2 hours.
Yeah, there you go. Because remember that shove by Corin Halfhand?
Well, one brother inside the lines of these guys is worth 100, or did he say 1,000 outside the lines? But he's got a lot of
What will he have to do in order to become trusted by those wildly.
No spoilers.
Now, let's move on to Sam. You mentioned Sam.
Oh, dude, if that happens, that would suck. What you're about to say.
What are you talking about?
We have a telepathic connection, Micah. Don't deny it.
Oh, man.
Is that what you call it?
There's only one way to prove you're not a crow anymore, and that's to kill another crow.
Oh, jeez. Listen, here's the thing. Here's what I'm annoyed by, because I know this from the books. I was disappointed that we didn't get to see Ghost find the hatch where the guy was pressing the button. No, not the hatch. Excuse me. It was just hatch. I thought
yeah,
it was the
where's
hatch.
Where's Desmond?
We didn't
lost
get to
see, reference number two.
We didn't get to see Ghost find the obsidian dagger. We didn't get to see John give Sam the dagger instead of Sam just finding it without him. And I want to see the direwolf some more. And that was kind of meh.
We haven't seen hardly.
Yeah, where is Ghost?
Oh, he's, you know, hanging
actually.
Out.
Actually, why couldn't he have helped John escape? I don't know.
Ghost, who's this now?
See, exactly. Exactly.
That's an honest question.
No, Tyrion calls him.
But listen, everybody listening to the show, you guys included, like, that right there. Eric is a host on a Game of Thrones podcast, and he's watched the show more times than I've seen it. And literally, if they're not giving enough attention to small things like this, it's very clear that it's not important for development
of
the series.
Yeah, Eric is our test.
The compass of what, Jesus.
Yes.
I got to give you a nickname. I'll figure it out one of these days.
Okay. But Ghost, seriously. Okay, so they find this hatch, right? Sam finds this hatch. It's not a hatch. It's like a tombstone with the first people wrote on this. And beneath it, they find a horn and some arrowheads, were they?
I don't
Something
know.
Like that, yeah.
So was it just like a stash?
Yeah.
I figured it was an arrowhead because they looked like they were shaped just like arrowheads. That's how I figured it was.
Remember, it was wrapped in a one of the old Night's Watch's cloaks.
Yeah, so I was like, this was just like from Lost, I thought. It was just like a scene where they're finding like others' clothing and then like theatrical glue underneath it. I was like, ooh, something's rotten. Like, you know, that somebody's posing as a crow sometimes, but then sometimes
that would be cool.
Also has like this obsidian, you know, dragon arrowheads to shoot with and a horn. I was like, well, okay, so they can signal people over, but it just seemed like one of those caches.
They were geocaching is what they were doing.
Geocaching for, you know, just for supplies or something. If you're out in the wilderness and you need to kill something, then go to this marker and you'll know what it means.
Are you
you'll
talking about Katniss and Gale? Come on now.
You know, just the supplies when you need them. When you need them, where you need them. I mean, it's got to be pretty barren out there. You know, it makes sense to leave yourself some supplies in a hollowed out tree or whatever.
Yeah, that's the thing. We have no perspective. They haven't really said anything about it, and they haven't really showed anything. All they've been really concerned with from my end is making dick jokes and capturing the sweetest glaciers that they can find.
Yeah. So they're just up on a hill somewhere, and I guess they were digging a latrine. Why were they digging a latrine on that hill?
Why not?
Like, that's, you know, well, okay, why not? But is that a sacred place? Why is there that hatch there? Like, you know,
they said it was a symbol of the first men, right?
Right.
Yeah, so the first men thought that hill was special.
I'm sure that, it's a very simple explanation.
Yeah, no,
It's just the tomb of the first men, because that's where the person who buried them knew that the other Night's Watch people would come to.
Yeah. I don't think that it was important at all, and they glossed it. No. The only reason I was annoyed by the thing at all, and I wasn't really like actively annoyed, it's just like, oh man, like, I think Ghost is cool. He's a good character. You know, I just want to see the direwolf, you know. I want to see Sam get
and
a dagger handed to him.
And as someone wrote into the doc, and I think that's important to mention as well, is that even though they talked about the dragon glass, they didn't mention the horn at all.
When I saw that,
and the horn is kind of important.
When I saw that, I don't know if anyone here has ever played Skyrim, but I played it. I bought it and then like played it for 30 minutes one day, and I saw that scene and I immediately thought of the horn of Jürgen Windcaller. So anyone who's listening, that's the funniest thing that's ever happened. Like, it's basically the same exact scene from a video game.
The name is kind of similar. Funny to that horn.
What's
funny about the horn?
Well, no, actually, the name would be similar because like it's like a really Nordic name, and I guess in Westeros they're the Nords. So I guess that does make sense. Yeah. Well, okay, so and this goes out to the readers really quickly. Significance in the horn. Is it a big deal that they didn't show the significance immediately there, or will we find out later? Because I feel like if they showed it in a shot, because they leave out basically everything else, then it's got to be important.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's significance to the dragon glass, which I'm sure we're going to learn about probably before the end of the season. And the horn as well, I'm sure, will come up in conversation. I have confidence that they're going to kind of loop it in somehow before the season's out.
Did anybody else think irrumpent horn, or was that just me?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, they didn't. Okay. They should have backed away from it.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because it's very explosive. You know, I love just to talk about the dragon glass. I love the bringing things together from the old ages. You know, relics of dragons. So you have Harrenhal, which is still to this day melted from dragons. You have these old obsidian arrowheads, whatever they are, that are from when dragons roamed, and now we know that there are new baby dragons in the world. The question that brings up, I think even in this episode with Daenerys, somebody mentions, it seems like somebody mentions every episode, how many years it's going to be before the dragons are actually decent killers, like can stand on their own.
I think that they definitely do listen to the show for sure, because the line they added in there at the very end, they were like, I feel like they were trying to make Selena and I feel better about Daenerys. They were like, listen, in a few years, Khaleesi, those dragons are going to be, or they were saying, it was between Tyrion and No Balls. They were like, I can't call them No Balls. Between Tyrion,
No Balls.
It's so mean. It was between Tyrion and Varys. They were just like, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then he was like, and then there's, you know, the young Daenerys girl. She's got dragons, man. And then he was just like, one game at a time, dude.
One game at a time. I love that. That was so amazing.
That entire scene, their whole exchange from the inception of when they started talking, when he was like, hey, what's up, blah, 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 blah. And he looks down at Tyrion and he goes, if we're going to play, you got to start. It was like truth or dare in grade school.
Yes.
It's like they knew that they start shit with each other. So they were
so good in this episode. And Tyrion was so good in this episode. You know, first I want to mention Tyrion and Bronn. And Varys obviously came in at that scene. But when they're trying to plan, you know, for against the siege, and they're reading that book and they can't pronounce the author's name.
Yes.
And there's this game among themselves.
The best part was Bronn, who's considered the brute and the muscle of the group. The best part is that he was the guy who knew this shit, and like a smart Tyrion and smart cloak guy, you know, they don't. That was so funny. I feel like this episode,
Bronn is awesome.
Oh yeah. I feel like this episode could spawn, like I said, a bunch of spinoff series of like sitcoms with like Brienne and Jamie, and with like these three, you've got like the midget, you've got the guy that has no balls, and then you have the brute.
The sellsword.
Isn't that just, I just thought it was so beautiful.
It sounds like the beginning of a weird joke. The midget, the eunuch, and the sellsword walk into a bar.
Yeah. Well, the line, I mean, we could throw books at his men. And he says, we don't have that many books.
They were serious. It was so serious. The acting was brilliant. You know that they got so many beers after they shot that and just hung out for the rest of the day. Like, you know, they give me some suspension of disbelief. Like, that's what I want to think.
That scene with Varys and Tyrion was probably my favorite, like, one of my favorites so far this season.
It was the only time that I've ever liked his character, Varys' character. And I haven't liked him ever before, even before I thought he was a total, like, before he did bad things in season one. But for me, as far as from the actor, I felt like we got to see a piece of him that we hadn't got to see before, and I just really enjoyed him as a character.
Got to see his flirtatious side a little bit.
Oh, God.
When he says, you got to start the game. But they were able to come to some kind of an agreement with each other. He says, didn't they say it's such a relief to finally agree on something? Mm. So that was interesting. What about Joffrey when Tyrion walks up to Joffrey and he's all preparing for battle, talking shit on Stannis?
Joffrey's like, just like...
What was that all about?
What was the quote?
It was awesome.
Oh, I got
when,
it.
When
I wrote the quote
and Varys
down.
Afterwards.
He says... they say Stannis never smiles. I'll give him a red smile. And he pulls his knife out just a little bit.
Jesus,
I'll give him a red. I thought, man, you're watching, you little boy, you're watching too many Christopher Nolan movies.
He's watching Dark Knight.
He's watching the
right,
Dark Knight.
Exactly.
You have to sit down, you know, seriously, you saw it in a movie somewhere. Don't pretend it's your own idea.
And then when he walks away, Varys and Tyrion are just like, yeah, that's going
to
happen.
You know what, guys? I want to append my original opinion from the beginning of the episode. Because the beginning of the episode, I was kind of with you guys. This one was a little slow, comparatively speaking. But damn it, this was a really good episode. I mean, these comedic exchanges within the story, this is just like Braun cleaning his nails was standalone one of the funniest things. This is the guy who just randomly stabbed some dude through the top of the shoulder and then kicked him out of a hole in the ceiling and fell down into a mountain range. You know what I mean? And he's sitting there cleaning his nails with a little spit of wood. And, you know, Tyrion, who's supposed to be like the prim and proper, like smart one, was just like, hey, can you stop doing that? And he's like, I don't like having dirty hands. I like to keep my hands clean.
No, it reminded me of like an old married couple. Oh, you're picking your nails. Why do you got to do this? Can't you help me do this?
I'm like, you don't want me cleaning my nails. You don't want me looking your way.
Looking your way. Yeah.
What do you want me
exactly.
here for? It was totally. Oh, that was so good. That was so good. What did he say? He goes, I don't want to wear a gold cloak. Gold catches the light.
It's like, well, you're not dashing through alleyways no more. And I'm like, oh, come on, you guys, really?
Yeah, I mean, but it was, correct me if I'm wrong here, but me personally, I don't feel like it was a departure from like the mood of the entire show. I felt like they fitted in nicely.
Yeah, it didn't seem odd at all. There was some real tension in this episode, and then there was some real, you know, the opposite of tension in this episode, and it just all played very well. I mean, you even had romance between Rob and the nurse, and
you know, yeah, we did. Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, it didn't stand out as being overly, you know, dull or romantic. It was just they had their story arc. You know, Tyrion and Bronn and Varys had their story arc. You know, Cersei had her stuff to do, and Arya had her stuff to do, and everybody just kind of got on with it. Like, this is the perfect, as Selena was mentioning, calm before the storm episode.
Not overly romantic. The bitch fucked them with their boots on. I mean,
that's
come on,
not romantic.
Really?
Jesus,
really?
Calm down, Terrence.
I'm sorry. Whoa. I get excited whenever I talk about this. So,
well,
yeah, we can tell.
Yeah. oh God,
I was gonna ask about something slightly different, which is, you know, when what's her face, not Jane, was telling her story to Rob, and it was supposed to be this whole sort of establishing what a terrible life she'd had. I was sort of a bit underwhelmed.
Yeah, it didn't sound terrible.
Like,
she's talking about a massive orgy by the lakeside that they all go to every year because it got too hot.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I guess maybe why, Selena, correct me, or like, how do you feel about this? Because like, we all knew that the fisherman, when she started talking about him, that he was going to perform CPR. You know,
I didn't
or whatever,
know.
Whatever
I had no
it is
idea.
That we would call it. I don't know. I felt that way because when she's like, and then he started pressing on his chest. I'm like, okay, end the story. The audience knows what's going to happen here. Your brother's going to spit out his water and come back to life.
But yeah.
It just seemed like, but to them, it was, to her, obviously, it was this great shock. And obviously,
yeah,
she was
dramatic. Compared to
enough.
Like what else has happened, yeah. It just seemed, I was waiting for something really tragic, and I was like, okay, that's your big sell. And then he was like, oh my God, I love
guys,
you. And
guys,
like,
listen.
Well,
Rob was not listening because he liked
yeah,
the story.
Exactly.
Rob was listening, and I do have to hand it to Rob. And I got to hand it to you guys because when we first created the show, we set out to create a format where we literally just talk about the episode the entire time, and I feel like we finally are bullshitting just enough where we have it. This is like perfect form, but I do have to hand it to Rob Stark because he definitely didn't seem like that was his first time. So good job, Rob.
No, yeah, well done. I was as well when I was watching that scene. I don't know if any of you guys had a similar experience, but I sort of forgot because it's been kind of a while. Since something like this has been so graphic, I kind of forgot I was watching an HBO show. So I was like, oh, they're kissing. They're going to cut away.
Boom.
Oh. They're going to cut away.
Oh, I see your tits.
They're not
oh,
cutting
I see
away.
Your ass. Oh, she's climbing on top of him on the stone floor.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's
yeah,
not comfortable.
No,
don't do that. Yeah. It's not comfortable.
Well, don't do that. Find a bed.
It was great.
The thing is, like, earlier in the episode, they
it's
had
I like them, though.
I feel like I needed a cigarette after I watched that. That was awesome.
God, dude.
Well, earlier in the episode, Rob and her were talking about how he didn't want to go get married. And then that obviously culminated when he was like, yeah, I don't really want to do that. And she tells him her sob story. Right. And then they get down to it. So,
yeah.
I liked how the guy that was
like
in there,
them,
I forget the advisor's name, that was talking to Rob about war, like really important stuff. He was in there with Roose Bolton, and they were really like hashing out some serious shit that's going to like – it's going to be the decision on how people live their lives and how kingdoms do what. And then the girl walks in. He's like, all right, I'll leave you to. He just walks out like a friend in college, you know? Just.
Yeah.
Well, here are my notes. Rob talks Winterfell with Roose. Hot nurse shows up, tells pity story. They fuck.
It pretty much happened just like that. If you could do bullet points for every episode, like for HBO, I'm pretty sure they'd let you put it on HBO.com.
I'm actually looking at my notes. I pasted them in the doc, and I think this is the best line from my notes. I said, oh shit, they found the hatch.
Yeah, the hatch. I really wanted Desmond to be down there. And,
oh Jesus.
You know, Henry Ian Cusick should be on this show if he's not already. I mean, they're up his way all the time.
He should be on the show. So, that's a good point.
He could be part...
Let's start campaigning for that.
Did anyone think, like, when Sam was like, he can't die, his sword is Valyrian steel. Like, that's like a video game thing. It's got, like,
Valyrian steel?
It's got plus five intestinal fortitude.
Yeah, plus five. And
Link.
Yeah, he's Link, basically. He's like, if he has a full heart container, he can shoot lasers out of his sword, guys. He's not going to die. He's good.
Yeah. There was another good line in that scene. Since you brought it back up, I wanted to remember that. Sam is saying, "Oh, Quarren Halfhand is the greatest ranger," and the other guy says, "Great rangers never get old is the problem. Shit ones neither. Some in the middle last a long time."
That's really good too. Yeah.
That was a good quote.
What is his name? What is that guy? I've been trying to remember that guy's name because he was hilarious in another episode as well. Do you remember, Micah? That guy who always complains.
Oh man.
Sam?
No.
Yep.
The one who complains, but we don't like him as much as Sam. The other one.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm sorry, listeners. I'm sure you're all like, it's blah, 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 but I like him. Blah, blah, blah. I think he's funny.
That's going to be his
insert name
right?
That's blah, blah, the blah, most blah, uncreative blah, blah. Nickname we've ever given anyone, Selena. Nice try. Nice
I'm
try.
Sorry.
Blah, blah, blah. We have to keep that, though. That's her first. That's her... You know, first nickname.
My first nickname.
excellent lamprey pie. Were you slaving in the kitchen all day?
Speaking of that scene, you were talking about Rob thinking, you know, getting a little distracted, not really listening to his story. So Cersei's line to Tyrion, you know, that little worm between your legs makes half your decisions for you.
It's not that little.
It's not that little.
Yeah, I wanted to actually bring that up, though, because, Zach, you were talking earlier about how you actually liked Varys in this episode. And, you know, watching it in that particular scene, I realized that Varys is the only person that knew that Shay was with Tyrion. So mm-hmm. Varys was the only person who could have put somebody else in her place and fooled Cersei. So... Do you like Varys even more now? I mean,
let's be clear here. I have forever loyalty to Ned Stark, so I hate Varys. And if I ever see this, and I'm talking to you, Baldy, if I ever see you in person, I will throw things at you because of what you did to Ned. That being said, no, I didn't like him at all. But I liked him more than I did, which was hatred, so that's something, right?
Who else felt that sense of relief whenever the other... horror was brought in.
Oh,
and it
that,
wasn't
no, that
Shay.
That relief was felt nationwide. No. I think or inter.
I
yeah.
I was disappointed because I do not like Shay in the least. In the least, she's just.
Yeah, I think she's annoying.
She's distracting him, and that was the first time I've seen Tyrion ever in this show look weak. He lost all swagger and got on his knees and was like, "Oh my God, please say you're with me. Please say you're mine." And she's like, "This balcony has a hell of view, so I'm definitely with you."
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to allow him some humanity here to be weak because he was very strong at protecting her. And when Cersei, you know, told him that she had his whore and stuff, he maintained his composure 100%. He even went, you know, made a show of, oh, I'll never, you know, I won't forget you, never, never, you know, to sell the idea. You know, the range of emotion on his face in that scene was absolutely nil. Cersei couldn't read him. She really
was
the one. She thought she tricked him. No, he tricked her.
Well, what was the horror thinking the whole time? The one he was talking to, she's like, well, it wasn't that good. Come on now.
Well, I wish we'd known a little bit more about how that happened, how they captured her. Like,
right.
Was it Varys who turned her in and said that she was this whore when she wasn't? Or was it the necklace that she had?
She is a whore.
Yeah, she is.
She's Rose or whatever the...
Roz.
It was Roz, yeah.
Oh, that's Roz. Well, the line, the only thing that could have been Tyrion's undoing is the line that he says when he says, "I thought you like blondes," because because if the whore that she had found that wasn't Shay was blonde, that would have screwed that up. So there was maybe a little writing, issue there, but overall, I'm just glad that there are not that many blondes in King's Landing because they're all Targaryens and now they're dead. So. There you go.
What really got me was whenever Cersei said, "I'm smiling because I'm so happy," and all that other stuff. I mean, come on.
She
really
was drunk. Lena Headey in this episode was awesome. I'm just gonna say that.
I didn't see their conversation going south. I thought that was going to be like the first like real, I don't know. I thought they were growing stronger because the war was about to happen.
Yeah, it flip-flops a lot between them two, because we had them in last episode, they sort of came to an understanding about Joffrey.
Yeah.
And this episode, she was back to completely hating Tyrion and being like, "I hope you feel the same pain I did."
Cersei has these moments of humanity. She really does. But then you're right, she does flip-flop back to the other side, and we see her for what she really is.
Which is...
crazy bitch.
Exactly.
Well, you heard it here, folks.
But you bleep so good, I'm on top of it. Oh, why is nobody mentioning Wildfire? That's my question.
Because we're not going to see it until next week.
Happy birthday, Snack.
I told you
Happy
about birthdays. That surprise. I told you about that. It's a royalty to Zelda every single time, guys. Come on now.
But, I listened to the last episode, and I think I referred to the book way too many times, so I've tried not to do it this episode, but this scene with finding out about Shay, quote-unquote, is a lot different in the books, because Shay is actually kept, like, off King's Landing, isn't she, in, like, a whorehouse?
She's completely... isolated, yeah, and
she's
sort
sequestered,
of complains
like
about it every time. Yeah, every time we see her, she's like,
finding her would be like finding a needle in a whorehouse.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Wow.
Well, if she hides in a brothel. But, I think it was of note because here Cersei and Tyrion are talking about the siege and about how Cersei is going to kill Shay or cause just as much harm as gets inflicted on Joffrey. And yet neither of them are talking about the wildfire to each other. Cersei is the one who thinks she has control of the wildfire, and that's her main plan of defense from what we know, to actually use it on Stannis. Tyrion's the one who actually has control of the wildfire, supposedly, since he held the guy at knife point or whatever. But neither of them are talking about who's actually going to give the order to go down and use the wildfire. That's going to cause some serious time delay, right? Like Cersei says, "Oh, go get the wildfire," and then he's like, "I don't work for you." And she's
like,
"What?"
You think of the craziest stuff, Eric.
I'm just saying, logistically, as it plays out, then Tyrion's going to be like, "Oh yeah, okay, yeah, she's right. Go get the wildfire." And he's like, "Okay, master." And then she walks away, and there's this weird exchange. Like, really? Because what was the point of Tyrion subjugating Cersei if he's not going to do anything better with it?
I love that Eric's thinking about the bookkeeping of how this war is going to happen. They're like, "All right, well, who's going to get the wildfire?" That's beautiful. That's good.
Here's what I think about the wildfire. They are actually going – they're really going to have to use it next week because they failed to come up with a sufficient battle plan to be able to prepare – Helm's Deep, oh my God. King's Landing. I was going to say Helm's Deep. King's Landing for a siege. I mean, they know, Mudgate, we're going to, stash our forces here and hope for the best. But they really haven't come up with any kind of overall battle plan for it. So they're going to have to use the wildfire. And that's going to have some really grave consequences, I think. Well, just going off of what they were describing about wildfire a couple of weeks ago.
Well, we don't see them fleeing is the interesting. Going back to Tywin, talking about his advisors are saying that, Cersei and Joffrey should leave King's Landing.
Right, right.
Get to safety because Stannis is coming for you. He's going to behead them. It's better to be alive, et cetera.
And
Tywin objects to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it might have been the right decision, especially if King's Landing is going to be burned to the ground because people don't know how to use wildfire. There's just way too much of it. That may have been the wise decision. As it turns out, but
am I the only one that has just never given the wildfire another thought after it happened? Like, I just don't think, I haven't thought about it.
I mean, it's the only legitimate defense that King's Landing will have.
It's kind of like, it's the atom bomb of that show.
Right.
It's just that you're just waiting for it to go off. Like Jughead, you're just waiting for it to go off.
Oh, wow. Another lost reference.
An unexpected lost reference. That was the,
Let's switch, though, to the other side of the battle. We've talked a lot about Tyrion and Cersei, but we did get, finally, another shot of Davos and Stannis, and a really cool exchange between the two of them, I thought. Stannis saying that once he's king, that Ser Davos will be named Hand of the King. And we also got some interesting backstory on really how Storm's End was initially taken during the Targaryen rule.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see there's a bit of bitterness on Stannis' part, but I think there's also a lot of honor that is shown by him, saying, basically, I did what my older brother Rob told me to do.
Right.
Because he was my older brother, but he was also the king. Uh-huh. And I thought you got a lot of character development out of him in that particular
scene. You did. I mean, he's going around mentioning Renly's name out loud without feeling bad about it, so I'm a little upset with him still. But there, he does get points in this episode for not having that red Riding Hood wearing cloak bitch wearing Melisandre in the scene next to him when he's giving, you know, this story to Davos. So just, you know, props for her not being at his side in this episode. I think that makes him a stronger character. What I wonder, though, is what he has against cats. That's
I
really
know.
My outstanding question. He's like, cats, never liked them. Okay, we ate them. He's like, dogs,
I love that
though.
Speech,
though. Dogs loyal. Didn't want to eat him.
Again,
we ate him.
Again, this was one of my favorite exchanges in the series as a whole. And this includes season one, because we got to see just, I thought that was a great picture that they painted. And I really like Lord Davos.
Me too. You know, I think Liam Cunningham has really been underused this season. That's like one
until
of the main things. Till now. Yeah, I know he's probably going to feature more prominently in these last two episodes. But I really felt like, considering who he is and who his character is in the series, I felt like he should have been more established at this point. But I'm so glad that they gave him this in this episode.
That's Selena's way of saying he's going to be alive for a while.
Yeah.
that's my way of not saying that out loud.
Spoiler alert.
No, it's really too late. You really did say that out loud. So I'm wondering now if he's going to be the new Hand of the King or who's going to be king. The thing is, though, I didn't get to say this when we were talking about Joffrey. When he says that about, I'm going to go down to meet, you know, my uncle and give him the red smile, whatever. When he says that, I thought, oh my God, there is not a single scene the rest of the season that I would rather see than Joffrey stand in front of Stannis and for them to have a conversation. No matter how short it is, I want to see those two characters in front of each other, because I think that would just be the coolest thing to watch.
Yeah, that would be interesting, actually.
Uncle and nephew, and obviously Uncle probably heard about the nephew and knows he's not his and probably says it to his face, but I don't even want to speculate. It'll be a million times better than anybody, including myself, can think that it'll be if only they show it. So Joffrey is certainly hoping to meet Stannis in person. I hope that happens.
Did you guys feel something when Stannis was giving his talk to Ser Davos and he was like, by the way,
feel what?
You are definitely going to be my hand, and like he was just giving him all of this props, and I feel like maybe he felt stepped on some when Madame Shadowvage was just like hanging out in the scene and she was just like taking over stuff, and I feel like he was just like, oh, he really does love me still, like we are bros. And I know that we haven't got to see a lot of him, and we haven't got to see a lot of Stannis for that matter, but that scene, even with the low amount of inclusion we've had with them in the series, I felt like they were important, and I felt like it moved me like a normal character would. It was just powerful, in my opinion.
Yeah, when he's talking about the sons of Crabbers don't break bread with the sons of Lords, you know, this is Davos now we're talking about. You know, I just, that's insight, this character insight. They give him one monologue, and he's won me over, you know. I totally want to know everything about this guy. But that's what this show is good about, and I said this last episode with Jaime Lannister, that they have these characters that are just in the pockets, in the shadows. They can bring them forth, give them 5 minutes of screen time, and they'll be your new favorite character. They have such a strong cast that can just show up at any moment and deliver this great speech or deliver, you know, have this great moment, this great interaction. And there's just so many of those characters that are hiding, you know, in the back. And you know, they bring him forward when they need him, and otherwise they don't. I mean, it's just like this whole big world of great actors in the show. Wonder what Argus Filch is doing, you know.
Right.
I do want to
gross.
That's who Sir Davos.
That's why he doesn't like
that.
Cat.
Stannis
That's
doesn't
like
him.
Man.
I mean, isn't that Catelyn's sister? Right, is at the same place at the Eyrie? No, it's not.
No, Pike? Different place.
Yeah. No.
No.
The twins.
I was just gonna say the before twins. About Stannis that I think that's one of the things that he is, like, as much as I really dislike him, both in the book and in the series, the thing that he is that he is, he values honor above all else. And that's kind of the whole premise of his relationship with Davos, is that Davos was a smuggler who saved him and his people from starvation. So naturally, he anointed him to knighthood or whatever he did, lordship. He made him a lord, is what I wanted to say. But because he was a smuggler, he cut off like half his fingers. So he just has this really strange sense of honor that is all preceding. But in some ways, I like that because that means that he would be willing to make someone like Davos his hand.
I think that rule under Stannis would be comparable to something like Ned Stark, which is cool. Like, I at this point in the series, I guess, guys, let's go ahead and each of us throw down who we think should be the ruler, the person. Because in my opinion, like, I feel like we got to see so much more about Rob.
Of the kings, though? I mean, not like...
Of the five people, right.
Can you give us a multiple choice? Who are the five people?
I like Regis Philbin style. Just start laying it down right now.
Everything on my suit is black.
Yeah, who are the five people?
Trying to think if I can name the five. Right. I mean, it's Danny is has.
Well,
it's
four now. No. It was we have Joffrey, we have Stannis, we have Renly, rest in peace. We have Robb Stark, and we have the Greyjoys.
Okay, so that's four.
Four now.
I still think that Renly would have been.
Oh wait,
the
no,
best
Tywin.
One.
Wait, oh,
Tywin.
That's Joffrey.
Tywin's just hanging out.
I just said I still think that Renly would have been the best king because he had some experience with it. That's the difference.
Renly was kind of a ponce. I don't know.
He wanted to cooperate with everyone, and he wanted the whole thing that that they said about Renly was that he was fair and that everybody loved him. And I feel like he would have been a pretty good ruler. And I feel like that's the thing with maybe Rob would be as well, but I think what we've seen with Rob is that he's so unwilling to sort of make the sacrifices. And like Tywin said, he's a boy untested. So I think Renly kind of got the upper hand of him in there, but he's dead.
And he doesn't want it. That's the thing. He just wants to go back.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
What do you think, Terrence? Who would you pick? Who's
well, honestly, I would pick Robb Stark because, you know, I kind of think of him in the sense that Selena thinks of Renly, but I think of Rob asserting his authority a little bit more.
I don't know if you want to think of Rob in the way Selena thinks.
No, I'm not talking about that.
It's okay, Selena.
I can't even argue.
It's okay.
That doesn't work out for you. Sorry.
But he does. He is a natural leader. He does assert his authority early on, and
just to
I
be
think
clear, What's his game plan when he goes and becomes king of the North? Who's going to be king of the South?
It was going to be Renly.
It was going to be Renly. Okay, cool. So he has to find, if he does pursue his, you know, king's quest, he has to find somebody else to sit it in the South.
Well, the thing is, he's trying to liberate his kingdom, if you will, from the clutches of bad people. They don't, like what he said in this episode, they don't have to go kill the Lannisters. But he knows that if they don't do something, that his family and the liege or the other lords that pay him like homage, and that he had a great line in the show today was, my dad always told me that being a lord is a lot like being a father. You know, you have except you have so many children and you care about all of them just like you would one of your kids, and that's really true. So he's doing this because he wants everyone in the North to be able to live out their lives simply and without all of this, you know, hosh-posh stuff that the South is like. Because people in the North are very simple people, and he wants to make sure that they're all safe from bad people like the Lannisters, injecting their, you know, their own personal bullshit in their lives.
Right.
I think that Rob is clinging to honor so much so that his own camp is full of these prisoners of war, that even when a guest arrives, when a visitor from another town arrives, they have to stick him in a pig pen because that's the only place they have room for them for all these prisoners of war they've taken. I think Stannis would be a little bit more mindful of that kind of stuff. And I think, unfortunately, Stannis will probably be a better king than Rob.
Right.
To answer the question, since we were going around, I am going to go with Stannis. I think with Davos by his side, I just think that would be a really great thing to see in the Seven Kingdoms, particularly for all the other reasons discussed about Stannis by Selena and them. So,
well, you might go.
Yeah, I'd vote for Stannis too. I think. I mean, we were just assuming that. Renly is gone. Like, we can't resurrect him and bring him back, right? He's out.
Well,
of
yeah, he's
that
he's
right.
If we resurrect him and bring him back, he'll just be a ghost of himself. So
that's true. Yeah. I mean, I think we've discussed the fact that Rob would not really want the job. So why would you want somebody to be king who doesn't want the job? We've seen Joffrey be a shit king, so he's obviously, to me, out of the picture. And Balin has just kind of been chilling out in Pike for these last few years. I don't think he knows how to rule over anybody.
Yeah,
needs a shower. So Stannis to me is the easy choice. I think he'd be honorable. I think that he's, you know, somebody who kind of plays it by the book. And
he's so strict, though.
Well, that's good, though.
He's way too strict.
He's strict? How's he strict?
Yeah.
He is,
but it's also his by right.
He cut off Davos' fingers, like, just for the honor.
Yeah, yeah. After he brought in the onions and saved his wife's life. Yeah. Or saved all their lives.
But I mean, it's also, that's the one thing we haven't really discussed, and I know that Robert usurped the throne, but it is Stannis' by right.
Yeah. Well, he said that in this episode, he said, by every law in all of Westeros, I am... you know, the heir to the throne.
Yep.
So, and I was like, wow, okay. If that's so, then he's got a pretty good claim. Like,
I think that what Selena said was probably I agree with her the most, because Renly would have made a great king. He technically wouldn't have been a better king than someone like Stannis. And especially with a hand already in place like Davos, who we know is a stand-up guy. I feel like that would be a sick reign. Like, that would be fun. And it'd be a lot like they talked about. Stannis had a great little bit, and we got to feel a little bit. And it's almost like we need a prelude to the whole series, like how we want a Marauders book series. Like,
yeah.
I kind of want to know about Ned and Rob, like helping out cities and just traveling around and just being general badasses. Like, that was cool. And so that's kind of the kind of reign that I feel like Stannis and Davos would have, where they would just be just and kind. But that being said, I do feel like if Stannis is better, which I think that he probably would be a better king, I feel like Renly was what the kingdom needed at this point. They needed someone who was more congenial and someone who'd be more of a people person, because there's a long winter coming. There are possibly dragons coming, and it's just they needed something to give them hope and something to make them feel like they were a body of one again.
Speaking of dragons.
Well, I think I was going to just comment on that real quick. I think the problem with Renly was the people that, you know, that he surrounded himself with. Unfortunately, you know, he's got this new wife who he cannot satisfy, but she wants to be queen because she wants to be the queen. She wants to rule over everybody. She doesn't care for him. She knows their marriage is a sham. And, you know, he's got this Knight of Flowers and people.
Wait, but how does that work between her and Renly? Is Renly queen or is she?
They're both queen, no. Micah.
Yeah.
Come on.
If she had married him, she would have been king and he would have been queen. But she still wouldn't have been queen with Renly, so he had to go. But then I'm saying, like, with the Knight of Flowers too, like, even as an honorary position, like, people, it's too much tabloid. It's too much
he
scandal.
He could still have been king.
It's too much scandal.
Yeah,
you
he could have been king.
That.
This isn't America.
They're
more free in Westeros.
Well, the problem is, no, they're not, because the scandal of Joffrey being illegitimate and a bastard child in incest
different.
could have thrown the whole thing.
Eric,
power.
That is
so
different. You're talking about whether or not he likes to sleep with guys or girls can make him a king or not. That makes no sense.
No, I'm saying, unfortunately, look, Renly was a nice guy, but I'm thinking, like, nobody would have respected him. Nobody would.
Yes, they would, because really they already
given
knew.
Him a chance. No, they were already not giving him a chance. His wife was already not giving him a chance, is what I'm saying. You know,
what
she was already
mean?
Plotting against him. She was already
his
plotting.
Wife tried to give him a
yeah,
chance.
Yeah, she did. She wasn't plotting against him. What show were you watching?
Yeah, she wasn't plotting against him at all.
She was trying to raise his spirits.
Yeah, literally.
I don't know. I just think they all wanted something bigger. They all wanted something bigger than Renly, except for Sir Loras.
Disagree.
Guys, but you got to give it to Eric, though. That's the impression he got from the TV show.
He got, yeah, fair enough.
That's
yeah.
going to be my scapegoat every time you guys come to
the although,
not
I'll,
after,
although I do
not
have
after
to say,
two episodes from
I
now.
Am scared if you're watching the same show, because she definitely wasn't. She wasn't against him. Not at all. And
no,
she was,
when she was queen, when she was Renly's queen, she wanted Renly to be king, because then she would be queen.
But it's for her. It's not for, she like, it's not like she
yeah,
had any feelings for him.
But that's how she would feel for
like,
anyone.
But
yeah.
It's possible Cersei felt for Robert, right?
No.
I mean,
no.
No,
I mean,
no at
not
one
at
point.
All.
She thought he was sexy at first. I mean, because he was pretty hot. Like, he was, like, probably like Gendry, just, like,
he
jacked.
He looked like Gendry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, like,
who
jacked. Exactly. He's jacked, and he's like, and listen, Ned Stark's his bro. It's, like, Boromir in his heyday, and they're just like, oh, that's what I want to see. Like, that would be a better series. Like, those dudes are just, like, kicking so much ass.
Unfortunately, like, I just don't think any of these kings has a good female compatriot who really loves them. Like, with the exception of possibly Rob. I mean, if you're looking at Stannis, that Melisandre doesn't, you know, clearly just wants...
Stannis has a wife, yeah. too. Yeah.
Well,
we
Stannis'
don't see.
Wife is kind of out of the picture for the
I heard
most
that
part.
She gained some weight, too, so that's probably...
Well, yeah, but I mean, I think, to your point, the only thing we really see is, and he wasn't king, was Ned and Catelyn.
Yeah, which, yeah, I mean, well, we all know that Ned would have been the guy. That's the dude.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and this was, yeah. I was so pleased that this happened this episode, because I've always liked Robb Stark. I've always liked Robb Stark. And I've been a pretty big fan of Robb vocally with you guys and with friends that enjoy the show. And I'm really glad to see his arc grow in season two. And I'm glad that they added, quote unquote, chapters for him. You know, because in the book, we don't get to see a direct standpoint from Rob's perspective.
Right.
Yeah, I liked
right.
it at the end of the last season when he was going and being, you know, King in the North, King in the North.
Yeah,
that whole scene.
That was beautiful.
I was really behind him, and then there was really nothing. Like, I still am not sure, you know, of a whole lot of stuff about him until they show him, and I'm like, oh yeah, well, I remember this guy, and he's awesome. Like, he's got it where, you know, he was raised by Ned Stark. He's probably the next best thing, you know, for everybody.
I'm just super happy that in this episode we got to see perspective finally from his standpoint, not just from "you killed my brother, prepare to die," you know, but they didn't really kill him. Inigo Montoya needs to be quoted at any time if it's possible. But yeah. When Hot Nurse walks in and she's got a little candy striper outfit on because she just got from a Halloween party, and like the guy walks out and gives them time, and he's like, she's like basically, "Hey, what's up? How are you?" And he's saying. And he gives her the whole spiel about all the pressure that he's feeling from all these different angles. Like, my father was just beheaded. My mother just let out my number one captive. My brother is now paralyzed. And he doesn't even know yet if that his two brothers have been, AKA killed, I guess we could say that. But they weren't. But he knows that his best friend in the whole world,
yeah,
on a mission for him to go help their shit. Because they're, I mean, like, they've been at war for months. This is serious, serious stuff. His best friend not only turns on him, but takes the city they grew up in and kills people there. And, like, takes the city. And so he's going through all of this stuff. And we do know that he is this teenage boy that is handling all of this shit well. And he is winning wars. He has never lost. And in this episode, he finally gets the girl. So I just feel like they've always made him so easily likable. But in this episode, they really sealed it off. And I'm not sure where they plan on going with Rob's character, because where we had a departure from the book, we had a departure with Tywin and Arya. But now we know from this episode that he's leaving and they're sort of bringing it around and tying other stuff in. But this departure with Rob's character is so vastly different from the perspective Martin paints in the book. I'm curious to what they're going to do with his character.
But I really like it, though, the question that you asked, Zach, because I think he's in a position where he's extremely conflicted. You know, his mother has just betrayed him. He has to go and answer to all of his bannermen that he's had to call for this war. and Lannister's escape, you know, what's going to happen? How is that all going to play itself out? You know, are they going to get Jaime back? What's going to happen with his mother? You know, what happens when he finds out the news about Bran and Rickon? How is he going to respond to that? You know, there's so much, so many different directions, I guess, to answer your question, that they can take his character.
I just wanted to say about Daenerys that I think I finally figured out this week what it is about her that is so annoying in the show, which is, ta-da, I got it, I think, which is that I think that her problem is that she is kind of presenting herself as like a one-trick pony who had that big thing with coming out of the fire, and she's sort of like trying to relive her glory days already, even though it was only like a week ago.
She did talk about it forlornly in this episode,
she does,
didn't she?
And that's what annoyed me so much, because it's like, Daenerys is more than just the woman who walked out of the fire. And the fact that everyone in the show are treating these dragons like it's no big deal. Like, we had Varys and Tyrion just go, oh, well, we'll deal with that when it comes. And who knows if it's even true. And then we had these people going like, oh, I'm just going to take your dragons and take them. And that didn't even... That's not like, that's just, it just makes them seem less impressive than they are. So if you lose the impressiveness of the dragons, you've just got this like little girl shouting, no, no, I'm special, I'm special. And that just makes her so obnoxious.
You know, Jorah even made a comment that was like exactly what you're saying. Like, you would think that he would be the last person to say this to Dany, but he was just like, listen, you're not really their mom. Like, they're just dragons.
Yeah, like, nobody cares.
Yeah, no, really, though. Exactly. Like, that was actually, that's so true, and that's such an odd picture, because at the end of the day, he's the one that's been with her this whole time, and he's the one that had a very intimate moment when she touched his face this week, which was kind of uncomfortable to watch. But I feel like that's true. And so if he is telling her that she needs to chill about the dragons, that hey, anyone could like raise them and they could probably just get a cold and die because they're just animals, and sometimes animals do that because they don't have Dimetap, then, you know, I don't know. It's kind of comforting, because I was worried at the end of the last season. Like, I wasn't actively worried, but I couldn't sleep at night. Like, I was worried that they would make the dragons just be this big, you know, plot mechanic, and that would be what the show's about. And if it eventually gets there, that makes sense, because time goes forward and they will grow up eventually, but it's not there yet. And I was afraid that that was going to be the focus, but not only are they not focusing on it, they're making fun of it, which is what I'm doing too, so that's great.
But it doesn't make sense.
I don't think that they're developing her character that much, and maybe that ties in, Selena, to what you were saying, because last episode it was sort of that really brief scene that we got of her where they slice the necks of the 13. And this episode, it's a brief scene with her talking to Jorah.
Right.
And they're still not at the House of the Undying, and they're still not pursuing the dragons and trying to find them and you know, move on. Like, they talk about Astapor in this episode. That's kind of her next stop for an extended period of time. But I don't know. Like, I felt like her story this season was very brief compared to last season.
I think when you're talking about the books, and you said, like, for instance, I think I heard early on this season, you know, Jaime and Rob are barely in this book at all, in the second book, and their story from the third book or later books is being carried into this season. With Daenerys, I feel like, you know, to be able to walk through fire is a pretty cool, awesome thing, and it's going to come in handy, but it's not going to come in handy until most of Westeros is engulfed in flame. And she's never going to be able to use that trick now in the open daylight when there's no flames that she has to traverse to survive. So I just feel like her time is going to – she's in the wrong time and place. Like, she needs to get in a time capsule, wait about 5 or 10 more years.
TARDIS.
She needs to get in a TARDIS. Well, no, because then her dragons would still be too young, you know, if she takes them with her.
Well, she just leaves them and she can meet them later.
Really just wait, like, but they'll hardly recognize her. It'll be like Norbert not recognizing Hagrid.
Oh, he knows his mummy.
He knows his mummy.
That's what I'm saying, though. That's all.
You're right. But at the same time, you know, how many hundreds of pages were dedicated to her character in the book?
You mean in the desert, you know, looking for water?
Yeah, well, that is what we talked about, several episodes back, where they're going through this red waste and you know, it goes on for hundreds of pages, but in the series it takes all of 10 minutes.
Right.
Yeah.
If that, so.
I think they
just worry
like,
now that they're not.
Yeah.
So I just worry now that they're not even going to get her to the House of the Undying until the finale, and they're just going to see her enter and not even see what happens there until next season.
That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, though.
Yeah. It would be, because it would just be so pointless.
Well, her story was really, like we just said, her story was really never developed in this season. So I was thinking, you know, I was thinking about that earlier today, and I was thinking about other characters that were like that, but mostly Daenerys and how she, we really only saw her, walk across the desert, and then she gets to Korth, and then she, you know, starts to make these friends, and then some guy wants to hit on her and marry her and gives her this offer. But we really never have any kind of development other than...
Exactly. Well, like, that's why she needs to go to the House of the Undying this season, so there's a point to her character this season.
Wow, you're really leading heavy on the spoilers.
I'm sorry, Eric. I'm going to make this point really quick. It really wouldn't do anything for this season just because we really haven't seen her. I mean, I could care less if I saw her the rest of this season. She's bitching about her dragons. Go find your damn dragons. Okay, that's the thing.
Look, they ended this episode. They ended the episode three weeks ago. They ended the episode on the House of the Dying.
Exactly. So,
the House of the Undying, or that tower, you know, taking the dragons. The fact that she's not doing more, or that she's not the main plot, you know, just tells me that obviously... You know, she has stuff to do, but it won't come until much later. I wouldn't like it if they just wrote her off now. I do want to see what's in the House of the Undying. I do want to see
that. It's not that it's not moving, though. It's also changing drastically, too, because her Khalasar dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, her dragons are stolen. The 13 have their throats slit.
Mm-hmm.
Not very consistent with the written text. Okay, that's fine. But if that's the case, you need to move it along a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because as we already pointed out, you know, you're not even at the House of the Undying yet. And that's a pretty cool scene, so I'm interested to see how they do that. But it's left some to be desired in that part of the series.
Okay. I think that they relied, and I think that they assumed that what she's doing at Karth may have played on the screen a little better, and it may have been soaked up by the audience a little better. But... Game of Thrones has a very smart audience, and it's not the same kind of people that would be watching any other random show like Modern Family. So we want results. We want real resolution with conflict. We don't want to just see someone looking hot and, you know, people hitting on her. So I think that they planned it to go differently, and so I think that this episode or this this particular season coming to an end is just going to be enough for them to get time to get her going really well in the next few. And it probably has a lot to do with why they're splitting it in half, because I assume that there's more with Dany later. I don't know yet, but I mean, those dragons will eventually grow, and she'll probably turn into the main character.
I hope so.
Her time just hasn't come yet.
They basically said it word for word at the end of this episode, though. They were just like, those dragons will grow up. You know, like, they're basically saying, just wait your turn, Dany. You'll be a main character
soon. Well, Tyrion was the one who said it when he said one game at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, shouldn't they be going around, though, trying to kill dragons when they're young, when they're defenseless?
Yes. It's like, listen, if those people in Karth, ask yourself this question. Do you live in Karth? Yes. Okay, they circle yes. Do you have a sweet house because everyone in Karth is rich? Circle yes. Is it fun? Circle yes. Answer this one long form. This has no multiple choice. You just write what your opinion is. But do you like the idea of dragons coming and possibly screwing shit up? Okay. No. Why? Okay. You have good reasons. Kill the dragons because they're like the size of a dog.
That's the point, though. That annoys me so much with the show, is because in the books, I feel like it makes perfect sense that the dragons are so well hidden and so well protected, and mm-hmm. they are so close to Daenerys. Like, they would not be able to just steal them that easily.
Right.
So it kind of, she loses her power because she loses her dragons, and when she doesn't have her dragon, she doesn't have anything, and then she's just standing there shouting.
She's a squib.
Maybe if maybe in season three we'll learn a little bit more about why Karth was the greatest city that ever was and ever will be.
Well, we have finally discovered where all of our allegiances lie in the kingship. So I guess now it's time for you guys to let us know on Twitter who you think should rule the Seven Kingdoms. And I do assume that a few of you guys are going to be extra clever and pull some pop culture references. So I can't wait to see what sort of combinations you have with people like Justin Bieber and Kim Kardashian. So we'll be looking out for those as well.
What?
Wow. Okay. If I see a Justin Bieber one, I will forever chastise you and your Twitter handle.
No.
Okay.
That would be terrible to be chastised. Anyway, this is the time of the week where we go around and we discuss what we thought was the most own-worthy moment of the week.
Okay, well, my own was Yara saying to Theon, "Go on then, warn me." I love that.
Yes.
When I saw that, I was like, oh yeah.
go on. Never mind.
Warn him.
I'm just gonna do something.
Warn me.
Forget it. Who's next?
Who's your own, Terrence?
My own. It's with Tyrion, and whenever he's sitting there with Varys after Joffrey says, "I'm gonna give him a red smile and turn him into Joker." Tyrion says, "Why are all the gods such vicious cunts? Where's the god of pits and wine?" I love that.
That was good.
All right, my own then is Tyrion was actually owned by Bronn, I thought, this episode. The quote is, "And how did you accomplish this marked drop in thievery?" He says, "Me and the lads rounded up all the known thieves." He says, "For questioning?" And he says, "No, it's just the unknown thieves we need to worry about now."
That was good.
My own goes to Hot Nurse, since I still really don't know what her name is. And she said, "You're marrying her for a bridge?"
I hope it's a beautiful bridge. I get. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I think I have a dual owns this week. First one is one I had before, but I'll save that. The second one is definitely inspired by Micah's recent own. And I think that she also should get an honorable mention for an own for owning Rob's virginity. So that was cool.
To Lisa, right? That's her name in the series?
She can call me whatever the hell she wants to call me.
Hi, so we nurse. Don't get emails.
Hello, nurse.
Hello, anyway, nurse.
Yeah. And I think that my actual own is going to be when Miss Arya was walking around the courtyard of Harrenhal, minding her own business, and the guy says to her, he's like, "Where your stick now, bitch?"
Yes.
Or maybe hot pie. The pie was owning him constantly because that's all he could think about. So. He's like, he was like, "I bet they're putting the sauce on the crust right now." Anyway, so those are the sort of things
comments.
That we talk about when we're not recording the episode. You guys can only imagine what those things are. And if you would like to sort of get a window inside of that, or maybe just join the conversation with us like some of these people did on Twitter this week, we'll go ahead and let you know.
One was from Tran Nagwain, and they said, "Owner of the week, Jaqen H'ghar, because Arya made him her bitch by naming yeah. him." That was good.
Oh, God. Okay, yeah. Zach, Miss DL, the left lane.
I was
just
about to quote that.
Yeah, last night's ownment ? Lady Talisa owned Rob's virginity ... with boots on.
Great minds think alike.
Yes.
They do.
Yes.
Matthew Potter, Toko Masho says, "And you will know the debt is paid," referring to what he said to Cersei, his swearing to get her back.
Okay. Bruno Mars says, "Nothing better than a goat woman after a good fight."
A goat woman?
Did Bruno Mars really say that?
Yeah, Bruno Mars said that.
Bruno Mars submitted an owner of the week to us. He really likes the podcast. Thanks, Bruno. I call him Brune. Yeah.
I've got one from Jess O'Neill, who you might recognize from the Glee chat, who said, "My own of the week was when a girl told a man his own name."
You know what?
That was good.
Jess O'Neill totally owned us too. The guys here on the show. She goes, "You boys should be happy. It listed nudity."
Listen, I'm gonna allow that just to be you guys. I'm stepping out of that one.
Jasmine Alvarado says, "After Joffrey's threat, when Tyrion says, 'Imagine Stannis's terror,' Varys." His reply, 'I am trying,' is the best thing ever."
Ginny 081 said, "Arya totally owned Jaqen, obviously, but how are they going to fit the battle, the House of the Undying, and what happens after into two episodes?" And I'm glad to hear that everyone else is thinking the same shit, and we're just not a bunch of cynical bastards. So thank you.
And Erica, have the first part of your quote here from Matthew Potter. I don't know. You didn't read the first part, did you?
Which? Sorry.
"A day will come when you think you're safe and happy and your joy will turn to ashes in your mouth."
Oh, that tastes good.
Oh.
And you will know the debt is paid.
Right. I only got the second thing. Sorry, Twitter, for only sorry, Matthew Potter, for only allowing 140 characters and your own being a little longer than that. me only reading one of your thing tweets in the feed. But Bill Bennett, Bill aka Bill on Twitter, says Game of Owns ownage me owning Diablo 3. Okay.
Honorable mention for Diablo 3. Yeah. Well, I guess that Larry the Wombat gets an honorable mention for not only knowing the name of an actress, which is legit, but also constantly giving us really funny shit on both Facebook and Twitter.
Larry the Wombat says, apparently Davos totally owned those damn onions everyone was using to make fun of him.
And with that, that is how we close Game of Owns this week. You know how to send us owns. They are at our Twitter handle, which is twitter.com/gameofowns.
I would like you all to go to hyperbole.com. Which is hyperbole.com, and leave your comments in the Game of Owns post, because that is where I will see them.
Be sure to wish Andrew Sims, the site's owner, a happy birthday.
A happy birthday, yes, it is today.
It's going on to
today,
tomorrow.
My time.
Today,
Facebook.
Really?
It's today for me. So.
Aww, happy birthday.
And if you happen to see somebody riding on the subway wearing
send us your pictures of sleeping.
You can send us your pictures. At contact@gameofowns.com.
Submit your hand to the king as being
and we will post them on our website, which is gameofowns.com, as well as our Facebook, which is facebook.com/gameofowns.
Your iTunes comments, subscriptions, 5 stars have been overwhelming completely. I think we've had at least 2 conversations this week about how awesome you guys are in our email chain. So thanks again, guys.
I just got that joke that Davos.
And that will do it for this week's episode of Game of Owns. See you next week.
That is how it goes. Perfectly.
I am Eric Skull. This is Game of Owns.
I am Zach Lurie. This is Game of Owns.
I'm Mike Atano. This is Game of Owns.
Oh. I'm Selena Wilkin.
Continue. You don't have to keep the format.
And I'm Terrence Pinkston, and I'm so happy we got to see that field nurse this episode.
Well, bye. Well,
goodbye.
Bye.
Well, bye. Yeah.
Huh? What? Well, yeah. Well.
Blackwater?
Here it. What? Well, fellas, y'all all done? Blackwater's coming up real soon.